Welcome to another edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast. Today, the topic is important. Unfortunately, apparently, it's becoming more and more obvious that the concern is true. We are talking today with Dr. Mike Waller. He's senior analyst for strategy at the Center for Security Policy in Washington and president of Georgetown Research. And Dr. Mike, welcome to the Rick and Bubba University podcast.
It's great to be on campus with you.
Yes, well, the professors Rick and Bubba here trying to hand out degrees in common sense. So the book Big Intel came out in January, the subtitle, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. None of us want to believe the subtitle is true, but we sit here and do this show Monday through Friday, the big show, and also the podcast. And when we read the headlines and we see even the things we can see, and I know you're going to inform us, there's a lot of things we don't see, but you're informed on. There, it seems that this administration has weaponized these agencies. Yes or no?
Yes.
Yeah.
And it started under Obama, and it's really continued nonstop.
Mike, like Rick was saying, being a patriot, being an American, I don't want to think that the FBI and the CIA are nothing but heroes. And it disturbs me to see this and hear this. And I guess it kind of started, and I was wrong about some of this when the Patriot Act came out. We had been attacked, and, you know, people, a lot of them were on the left at the time, were saying, we don't need to give the federal government all this power. And I thought, well, it's a valid point, but we have issues. We don't know what we're up against. So maybe for now it's something we can live with and it won't be abused. But as time has gone on, we realize it has been abused. And I think a lot of us were surprised at the level that it has been abused.
Yeah, I was a proponent of these laws right after 9/11 also, and we saw the need for abuse, which is why certain elements of the Patriot Act and other laws were designed to sunset after a few years, because they were really dangerous. They would be subject to abuse, so they had to self-destruct after a certain amount of time after we got rid of all the terrorists. But Congress kept renewing it until this week. They kept renewing it or sections of it, and it has been subject to more and more abuse. Now, some of it is going to be any human endeavor is going to have mistakes. But in this case, when President George W. Bush centralized law enforcement at the federal level and intelligence into a single unitary office, as opposed to diffuse organizations, and took more power from the states, he did it with the means of fighting jihadist terrorists. But then a guy like Obama comes in, who's a real revolutionary with a vanguard party, and uses it to politicize the whole intelligence services from the top down while recruiting radicals from the bottom up. So now you have the whole nervous system of the FBI and CIA are run by people who don't even believe in our country and its founding principles.
Mike, I'm concerned. We saw this used in a political way when Trump was running for office and actually won. I remember when he came out and he said Trump Tower's bugged and all this, and I thought, oh my gosh, he's jumped to too many conclusions here. Surely that's not the case, but it turned out it was true. And it turns out that we were using the weapons that we have with the Pfizer court, that the FBI was misleading. I mean, the Pfizer court admonished them heavily about this, to get these judges to sign off on these warrants to monitor Trump and his associates. That's exactly the kind of thing that we never wanted to happen, right? I mean, and I don't really feel like anybody was punished over that. I think we had one guy go to jail for a year. A couple of guys lost their job. They've sued to get back pay. But was that the tip of the iceberg?
Tip of the iceberg. We keep learning more every day. And every time somebody comes out and says it's far worse, I've got to think, how can it get worse than this? This is crazy. This is America. But most of the time, it's true. Now, a lot of things are people are putting two and two together that don't equal four. But at the same time, so much of it's true. And I mean, for example, who would have thought that the biggest FBI counterintelligence activity, that's meaning to fight foreign spies activity, as far as anybody knows, of the past decade, was Crossfire Hurricane, which was a political operation to destroy the president of the United States.
Yeah, you know, and you were talking about this vote that just happened. I want to go back and land there a little bit longer. So we just had the vote that is going to let the FISA Act expire because of the allegations and the obvious abuse that we saw and the spying on Americans for political reasons, not spying on terrorist cell groups. But did Speaker Johnson surprise you a little bit in this? Was there a flip-flop there? I mean, the vote came in, and it is going to expire. I think we're thankful for that. But talk to me about where Speaker Johnson landed on some of this.
Well, Speaker Johnson's a good guy.
Yeah.
But the problem is, he's a nice guy. And a lot of times you can't have nice guys doing jobs like being Speaker of the House. So you know, he's pushed into a corner. He has a majority of, you know, pretty much zero, sometimes even in the negative when you have the rhinos going with the Democrats to defeat a lot of really good initiatives. But in this case, he got, and this is where the FBI and the CIA play our elected officials. You know, they can psychologically profile them, and they know Johnson is a pleaser. He's a nice man. You just give him a serious briefing about how his role is going to, you know, undermine our attempts to fight human trafficking or kiddie porn abroad or foreign spies and terrorists and so forth. And they will get him, and he'll flip. They do this with a lot of politicians. So I don't blame Johnson's ethics for this. I just blame the fact that he's probably too nice a man to have this burden on his shoulders.
Yeah, it's the old trick where you go, I'm going to let this expire because it's being used as a political weapon to spy on political opponents. And then those who oppose you come out and go, well, he doesn't want to stop kiddie porn. He must be okay with human trafficking.
Yeah.
You know, and they play that mind game with you, don't they?
Yeah. And imagine it's falling on his individual shoulders and no one else's, because his flip, you know, the whole country's future depends on whether or not he flips. So they flip him.
So Mike, what catch everybody up to speed on what the vote was exactly, and what was his position, and how did he vote, and where are we at on it now?
Well, the vote was to extend Section 702 of the FISA Act. Now, this is the part of the law that allows the FBI to use foreign intelligence. So that means it's breaking the rules of evidence collection. It's using our foreign spy services to spy on American citizens for the purpose of then opening up or pursuing criminal investigations of them. So this is where the world of spying on foreign enemies, or just foreigners in general, and the lawful monitoring of American citizens, where it blends into this gray area. So you need a warrant from a special court where the judges all have top secret security clearances. So the FBI can go to the judge and say, look, here's an American citizen who we suspect is working with a terrorist group. We're spying for a foreign power. We need permission from the court to get a warrant to monitor this person's communications. And so the court will, based on the evidence presented, issue a warrant. Now, the FISA court almost always issues a warrant. But what the FBI went and did is they lied to the court, or they in the case of spying on President Trump and others around him, or they simply went and the court simply agreed to it pro forma, or even worse, the FBI didn't bother to go to the court at all. So the purpose of Section 702 of FISA was to renew that provision. And this is what the conservatives were fighting against. Don't renew it until it's reformed. Could have been reformed easily, but the Justice Department didn't want to reform it. They wanted to keep the abuses in place. And that's where they tried. That's where they flipped Speaker Johnson, but they didn't flip the House.
So the vote ended up coming in the way those of us that are concerned about that, we should be pleased. That
it is going to expire, right?
Supposedly, you never know what kind of new things are going to be thrown up at the last minute. Some national security emergency.
Yeah.
Yeah, they always
those are always timely, aren't they?
Yeah, and you know, one thing in the book kind of is eye-opening about what we don't want to hear. And I know that Bubba and I know people personally that all of a sudden started saying, I got to retire. I can't stay here anymore. I can't stomach what's happening to these agencies. And they were good people. They were solid people. They were patriots. They were there to be what the FBI and CIA once were, heroes. And they couldn't stomach it. Do we still have a remnant of men and women in there that are not, maybe can stand up against some of this?
Oh, two questions. We have a remnant of good people in there, but they're not standing up against it.
I see.
And then a lot of the people who are quitting, really good people. So, you know, a lot, I know a lot of them, they can't stand it anymore, but they're not coming out and joining their brothers who've come out before them at great personal cost as whistleblowers. Not tell the story.
Yeah, that, I guess that's the question, the rank and file people versus the higher level management. Is it we still have a lot of good people at the lower level, and it's just the higher level people that have corrupted this, or is there a problem top to bottom? And I will tell you this, I have been fortunate enough to meet a few people who have worked in this field over the years. And one that I respect very much told me point blank, do not trust them.
Oh.
And that really hurt my feelings to some degree, because I want to wave the flag. And it's like saying somebody telling you that Santa Claus is coming to rob the house. You just don't want to believe that, you know. It's hard to process it if you've been raised the way we have. But is it top to bottom? Is it management? What are you seeing?
It's top to bottom. So right after 9/11, there was a huge influx of hiring in the FBI and the CIA and the rest of the intelligence community. And they needed a lot of younger people who were tech savvy, because neither the FBI nor CIA had kept up with technology, and who were energetic and had a lot of special skills and so forth. And they went on this huge hiring spree where character didn't matter anymore. It mattered to get the job done. And certain things that would not allow someone to get a security clearance were waived in the interest of getting a lot of people in the door very fast. Well, that was almost 23 years ago. Now, you figure someone who's been in government service for 23 years, if they start at the base level and advance up, they're senior management now, and they're not far from retirement. So you have people who came in from the bottom and moved up through the ranks to the top. And then you had others who were not really competent, but they were promoted under diversity, equity, and inclusion to push them up. And then they become militant in enforcing that and bringing other DEI people up with them. So that by the time that Obama comes in, because Bush, after 9/11, had centralized all this and made it all top down, made it easy for a revolutionary like Obama to come in and start elevating those radicals even further up, and then putting political appointees in on top who shared that view and who would accelerate it. So the whole system's become rotten, even though there are good folks still there.
Oh, we'll come back. We'll continue our conversation with Dr. Michael Waller when Rick and Bubba University, the podcast, continues right after this. Rick and
Bubba, Rick and Bubba. This is the Rick and Bubba Show. Watch more at blazetv.com/Rick and Bubba.
Rick and Bubba, Rick and Bubba.
Dr. Michael Waller is our guest on this edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast. So Mike, I do want to say this, because we talk about our need for whistleblowers, but you were talking with our producer, Speedy, but we also need to be sure we're clear when someone isn't a whistleblower, but is pretending to be one. Gavin Oblenis, we're seeing this story we have somebody admitting that they were placed there, and the agents attended the January 6th protest, and he's going to reveal this, what a lot of us feared. But we have to be fair and be sure that we don't let people get away with being fakes. And you're saying this guy's not to be believed?
I wouldn't believe him at all. I looked at what he said. It didn't make sense to me. He was not an FBI employee. He was certainly not an agent. He would look at his resume. He was only allegedly working there for a couple of years, probably as a contractor. And the same with the other agencies. He doesn't have a career of this as a professional. And the grade scale, the pay scale level, federal salary chart is so low. He's making sort of a Dunkin' Donuts kind of salary. So he's not in a position to know anything, first of all. He hasn't been in a position to know anything, because this kind of information is very compartmented. But he has a lot of symptoms of being a phony. problem is a guy like him says these things, and then people like us will think, wow, I knew this was true. This guy's finally got it. He's ex-FBI. He's ex-CIA. He knows the truth. I'm going to send this around and tell everybody about it. And then people end up believing it, not knowing what to look for. So there's a former FBI agent named Kyle Serafin. He's on X at Kyle Serafin, and he's head of a group of FBI whistleblowers called the Suspendables. This week, he put up a piece and a video on X to explain exactly, from a real FBI professional's perspective, why this guy is a phony and why his information makes no sense if you're really working inside the system.
Mike, you know, there's just so many things that we're not very smart. We're just kind of common sense people, and you know, we can look at something and kind of think, well, that makes sense or it doesn't.
Right.
And there's just so many things that I've never understood the way we do things. On a recent trip to D.C., I got a tour of Embassy Row. And you go up this hill, and there's this giant building at the top of the hill with antennas all over it, and it's the Russian embassy. We let them have the highest point in D.C. so they could spy on everybody. Why do we do things like that, Mike? Is it lack of intelligence? What are we doing?
It's nothing new. This was President Ford did that.
Wow.
He did it in the name of having good relations with the Soviets. Now, if you look, there was a reciprocal arrangement. So the Soviets got the highest point of land in Washington, D.C. for their giant embassy. Direct line of sight to the White House, State Department, Pentagon, and CIA. So they can
use their laser readers to hear the conversations off the window.
Exactly. But look, what did we get in return in Moscow? We got an embassy in a swampy area on the low riverbank, far away from the Kremlin. Yeah. In exchange.
And the first one that Reagan got was bugged and eat up with things. They had to tear it down. Matter of fact, pieces of it are in the spy museum in D.C. You can go see it for yourself. So I don't know. It just seems like we do some crazy things. Even if we want good relations with the Soviets, I don't think we give them prime real estate so they could spy on everybody. But when I went up that hill, went up that road, Rick, I was shocked at how big it was. And, I mean, put them down on the other end of the street so they can't have direct line of sight. But you know, we just do so many of these things, Mike. I don't get it. I know that as a society, we're smart enough. We've had great technical breakthroughs throughout history, and we've had the highest standard of living the world has ever seen. But we just do some really silly things that I think are going to end up biting us long term.
Time and time and time again. Now, you have look right now on the National Security Council staff, President Biden's chief aide for all intelligence programs is a guy named Maher Bitar. One of his earlier jobs was to work for the UN agency that's working with Hamas, the UNRWA. He himself is a Hamas supporter, and he's in charge of all intelligence programs run out of the White House National Security Council.
You got to be kidding me. What do you think? All right, so let's go back to this for a minute, because I think you go back to Ford. When I think of Ford, I don't see him as diabolical, deviant, a closet communist. I think he was just naive.
And had a bad knee.
Yeah, and because what you see is what we've seen many times is a misunderstanding of the enemies of this country. And I know you know this because of all the research and the knowledge you have. When you say things like, we'll give you the highest, place in D.C. for your embassy, and why don't you do the same thing for us? What is this world where we think our enemies see this as kindness? All they see it as is weakness, that they can that they can manipulate and that they can get advantage. When people are enemies of this country, they just see this as, wow, y'all going to make it easier on us. They don't go, hey, they're great people. Why don't we leave them alone? Now, I know with Ford, it probably was just being naive. But what you're talking about in your book is now we have people in very powerful places. It's not naive. They really do seem to be more like our enemies as opposed to being patriots of this country.
Yeah. You could rack up a lot of things too, incompetence or weakness or just simply having a different view of how to deal with the world.
Sure.
That's one thing. What's going on in our border right now is not an accident.
Right.
It's not naivete. It's deliberate policy.
And the
leaders of our government want this massive immigration. They're not screening people for terrorism to any large degree or subversion or even disease. So they're doing it on purpose. And we have to ask why.
Well, that's why what we want to ask you, Mike, what is the plan? Is it to turn Texas purple? Is it to turn the country purple so that Republicans and conservatives can never win a national election again? What is the driving force here?
That's a big part of it right there, because it's not only are these people going to be citizens someday and their children and children's children, but already as illegal aliens, they're going to be counted in the census for congressional reapportionment. So where these illegal aliens are, they're counted to determine how the congressional districts are drawn. And right now they're going to gain 13 congressional districts for the Democrats the next time there's reapportionment. So that's one thing to change our electoral votes and to change the way members of Congress are chosen in the different districts. That's going to have a huge effect on us. But there's something even worse, and that is that the people running our government now, the people in the intelligence community, in law enforcement, especially Department of Homeland Security, the leadership and so much of the management don't believe in America as we have always known it and as it was founded. They think America was settled and founded by white racists who wanted to create a misogynistic, racist society, use the Constitution as a document to institutionalize racism and white supremacy and male supremacy, and that our founding fathers were evil, that the Judeo-Christian ethic is wrong and evil and oppressive. Even the Greco-Roman traditions that bring us both logic and democracy and republican form of government, those are dead white men things. They all have to be cast aside.
You know, I've
your family is evil and it all has to be torn apart.
Yep.
You know, I've never understood how, you know, and they, as you said, they even take aim at our Judeo-Christian background. I've never understood where do not bear false witness, do not steal, do not covet is a racist promotion. I've never really been able to wrap my arms around that. Let's say that there is an evil plot to change the country at a rate that it would not naturally change at for electoral principles. We've talked about this before, and I want to ask you this question. So I get reelected, but look at what I have got reelected of. And is that, do they consider what it's going to look like at that point? Or is it just all about getting reelected and we really don't care what kind of state the economy's in and what kind of state the country as a whole's in?
For most members of Congress, whether we like them or not, it's mostly about getting reelected. Some of them because, well, if I get reelected, I can do the right thing, or we lost this time around, but we'll win next time around. So some of it's well-motivated, but it's still get me reelected. But for most of the congressmen, especially those who've already been in for a while, it's all the perks that come with being a lawmaker. It's all that special stuff you get. It's all that attention you get. Money that you raise from your campaign, you can keep it as cash if you don't spend it. That's income for you. You can land a really nice paying gig on a lifetime congressional pension. Even if you've only been in one term, you get a lifetime pension, lifetime health coverage, all these other things. You can do insider stock trading as a member of Congress. You have an eye toward in the future what lobbying firm or law firm is going to pick you up and pay you $500,000 or $1 million a year to peddle your influence with your former colleagues. So they're looking at all of this as members of Congress. Some are doing it selfishly. Some are just doing it unconsciously. But that would be probably about a majority of the Congress.
Yeah, so it's kind of like being a member of the Biden family. All right, so we'll come back. We'll continue our conversation with Mike Waller when Rick and Bubba University, the podcast, continues right after this. All right, so we all know the feeling. You need services. You don't think there's any options with any companies, except for companies that are just waiting for the next pressure from the government, and then they're all in, and they put all this stuff on social media, and they stand for all these things you don't agree with, and then you'll just scream, but Rick and Bubba, I have nowhere to go. Well, when it comes to wireless, you do now have a choice, Patriot Mobile. They are the only, and trust me when we say only, they are the only Christian conservative wireless provider out there. Now, we've talked about this all the time. They need to get your service also on merit, not just guilt. The merit is there. They have dependable nationwide coverage. They give you the ability to access all three major networks, just like the same coverage you have now, without funding the left. So when you switch to Patriot Mobile, you're going to send the message, hey, I'm going to be with a company that supports free speech, religious freedom, the sanctity of life, Second Amendment. I want to be with a company that supports the military, supports our veterans, and they should be taken care of, considers first responders to be heroes. That's what I want. Well, Patriot Mobile is the answer. Their 100% U.S.-based customer service team will make switching easy. Keep your number? Sure, no problem. Keep your phone? Fine. Or you can upgrade if you want to. Their team will help you find the best plan for your needs. Here's all you got to do. You ready? Go to patriotmobile.com/Rick Bubba. Or you can call 972-PATRIOT. Get free activation when you use the offer code Rick Bubba. Go ahead and make that switch today. Rick and Bubba University, the podcast. Dr. Michael Waller is our guest. The book, it's called Big Intel, how the CIA and FBI went from Cold War heroes, which is what Bubba and I would prefer they would stay, to now deep state villains. If you missed our conversation, we hope you go back and catch the rest of it.
Mike, let me ask you this. You've written this book. You obviously are very updated on this. We really didn't go into your background at the beginning of the podcast. Now, how do you know all this?
Well, ever since high school, really, when I first started out in the anti-nuclear movement, and I was concerned about the environment. This was in the 70s, so you had this hysteria about nuclear power. I got caught up in it because of who? Because of a radical high school teacher who I really liked, who was a neat guy, and he was this activist. I didn't know it at the time or understand it, but he was not just an anti-war protester in the Vietnam War. He was supporting the communist enemy in the Vietnam War.
Right.
Didn't learn this till later. I'm brought into the anti-nuclear power movement. I go through all the training and all these, some people fly in from California to my home state of New Hampshire to train us college kids. And then they isolated us and put me in what I realized later was a struggle session.
Now, what is that?
So a struggle session is something that Chairman Mao had done in communist China to sit people down and to get them to tear themselves apart, to get rid of their belief systems and their consciences, and to basically do what they were told, and then to be automated to do what they needed to do without having to be told. So I was put through this the first time. And then they said, why do you want to be an environmental activist? I said, well, because I care about, you know, dumping boiling water from the cooling system of a nuclear reactor into the ocean, because I go fishing there with my grandpa and my dad. And they said, yeah, as if to say, you stupid kid. They said, this is not about the environment. This is about overthrowing American capitalism.
Mm.
So I thought, well, first I'm out, but then I vowed I'm going to fight these guys forever. And
you know,
so I devoted my career to this. Worked as a college undergrad for Bill Casey, who was then President Reagan's CIA director.
Right.
Worked in a private network with him to collect intelligence on Soviet weapons shipments to Central America to the communist movements on our southern border, and later on to infiltrate and disrupt Soviet front organizations. And then along the way, got to know a lot of people in the various intelligence agencies and the FBI, and have kept it up for over 40 years.
Wow. So you mentioned this struggle session, and then you also talk about, which is a big topic right now, Daily Wire just got documents showing how the intelligence community is being censored from the top in order to get all the personnel to change the use of how the words they use. They're trying to impose this DEI ideology that you mentioned earlier to exert, change the way they think, the way they write, how they talk. this is a really big deal. This isn't someone like you just saying, I'm telling you, this is going on. Daily Wire has found documents that seem to confirm that.
Yeah, they absolutely do. They got the actual glossary from the National Security Agency. They filed a Freedom of Information Act request for this. I'd written about some of it in Big Intel, getting it from different sources in there. There was a lot that I couldn't use because I had to protect my sources, and I didn't want anybody to be able to trace who they might be. Daily Wire went and sued to get the actual documents because they were unclassified. And these are directives from the NSA. So these are the ones with the electronic spying, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, which runs the whole intelligence community, saying, these are the words you can and cannot say. You can't call jihadists terrorists jihadists. You have to use proper pronouns. If someone wants to use the Z or Zer pronoun, or XE or ZIR or whatever, whatever weird pronouns, you have to use it. And if you don't use it, you're contributing to a toxic work environment. And if you're doing that, you're not going to get promoted.
Unbelievable.
You're forcing people to act and think in an ideological way, which means they're contaminating the exact intelligence that they're supposed to be producing for our decision makers. And they're tearing apart rules of evidence for law enforcement and investigative purposes. If you cannot call facts facts anymore.
Couple of things, Mike. I want to flash back just a second to what you said about your teacher. He basically was grooming you to try to make you a Marxist, wasn't he?
Yeah. That's exactly what he was doing.
And that goes on in many, many classrooms across our country. And some here in the Deep South that I think people would be shocked that it takes place. Why do you think that the left owns the education system? Where did the middle and the right miss out on that?
They missed out when President Carter created the Department of Education in the 1970s. He centralized the education of K through 12. So now the education curriculum and teaching methods and even the training of teachers was taken over by the National Education Association, which itself was an ideological movement that was part of the creation of critical theory and cultural Marxism going back to the 1930s. The founder of it went to Stalin's Soviet Union and wrote six articles in the New Republic praising Stalin's education system and how it had to be replicated here in America. So this is what they call a long march through institutions. They take over one institution after another, media, entertainment, schools, churches, you name it, government. And in this case, it was education. So if they could centralize it, they could control it and take it away from the states, which were making the decisions on public education before that.
So I think a key, as we look at a common denominator in all of this, is when you centralize anything in D.C., you make it ripe for someone to take it over.
Yeah. They take it over. They're trained to take it over. So you think of these law schools that all have critical law theory, which is just like critical race theory, but it applies to law, meaning you take American law and you don't judge things by whether it's constitutional or not. You judge things by whether they advance a certain agenda. And then you twist the law and reinterpret the Constitution to fit that revolutionary agenda. And that's what's happened. And there's schools to go into the government workforce. In this case, say Georgetown Law School, cranking out lawyers to go into the Justice Department to exercise control over all of us in the country.
Well, and when you get a hold of education, like you just laid out, and we've talked about this on the show, of course, they use the famous trick. We're just creating the Department of Education to help educators. Mm-hmm. We're not here to dictate curriculum. We're not here for any of that. We're just here to provide money that you desperately need. And then, of course, once you take the money, well, now we got to have a say. Now, if we don't have a say, you can't have the money. And
I mean a say in everything, down to how many carrots you serve at lunch.
Right. But the bigger point is, when we say things aren't constitutional, well, I need to also take over the very educational system that would teach you what is and isn't constitutional. And unless you decide to go find out on your own, which most people, let's be honest, won't, then you're in the education system. So when someone says, well, we can't do that, that's not constitutional, they go, well, what are you talking about? It's fine to do that. You change the history, you change everything, and you've got control on top to bottom. And just like you point out in the book, unfortunately, about our intelligence agencies now, people just become robots to ideology.
Yeah. Yeah. And imagine in our system where you have one judge decides to interpret the Constitution some way or interpret the law some way. All the courts have to do it. That's what case law is. So then you have individual judges twisting the laws, twisting the intent of the laws and twisting the Constitution itself, which is why now Biden wants to pack the Supreme Court and expand it. Because he cannot tolerate a Supreme Court that's really doing what the Supreme Court's supposed to do, which is to be a check and balance to ensure that things are constitutional.
And I think, too, it just shows the politicalization of all of this. When you have the nine top justices in the country that should interpret and rule on the Constitution, and almost every ruling that comes down is a 5-4 or something to that effect. You think they should all see it in the same manner if they're all the best that we have and if the Constitution is clear, but apparently what it says is not the driving force. It is political agenda.
Yeah. Yeah, and this one of the clues is that if you hear somebody saying the Constitution is a living document.
Oh, yeah, no. Living and breathing. I like that one.
Yeah, living and breathing. Living and breathing so they can strangle it.
All right, Mike, I've got to ask you this, too, because we're running out of time, and I'll get hate email if I don't ask you. Based on your book, based on your knowledge, Eric Snowden.
Here we go.
Hero or traitor? Where are you at on him?
Traitor.
And why?
He's entrusted with secrets. He has to keep those secrets. That's the law. And he jeopardized people's lives who were working for America. And he jeopardized, he wrecked billions of dollars in very sensitive intelligence. He could have gone through the whistleblowing channels. He chose not to. He chose to dump it. And he didn't even have high enough access to have the shopping list of documents that he was releasing. He could not have known, based on the position that he was in. Somebody else gave him that shopping list. And then where does he end up?
Russia.
Yeah.
No hero would do that.
Good point. We'll come back. We'll finish our conversation with Dr. Michael Waller when Rick and Bubba University, the podcast, continues right after this. Rick and Bubba,
Rick and Bubba. This is the Rick and Bubba Show. Watch more at blazetv.com/Rick and Bubba.
Rick and Bubba, Rick and Bubba.
Rick and Bubba University, the podcast. Dr. Michael Waller's our guest. The book is Big Intel, how the CIA and FBI went from Cold War heroes to deep state villains. You mentioned that, and that's the most clarity I've ever really heard on the Snowden hero or traitor. And you said it's not that he had the information, and it's not that the American people didn't need to know. He went about it in a way that a hero would not, and didn't use the proper channels. But let's talk. I'm sorry, you have more.
Well, no, I was just going to ask Mike. We've identified a lot of problems, and I think you've painted a great picture of how it got there.
Sure.
How do we fix it?
That was my question too. So same question. Yeah. We don't like to go to the audience and say this is all horrible. It's terrible. It's hard. And then
we got to give them a way out. Yeah. You know?
What is the solution? What should we do?
First, support your local sheriffs, especially in parts of the country where the sheriffs really matter a lot. These are the democratically elected law enforcement officers, so the chief law enforcement officers of the county or other jurisdiction. And in so many parts of the country, they're the guys. They have the power to tell the federal authorities to get out if they feel the feds are abusing their authority in their county. They have the authority to deputize federal agents to enforce state and local laws. They have the power to provide all the local services and the eyes and ears of the FBI and the ATF and these other out-of-control government agencies. And most of them go along, many of them go along with it because they think it's necessary to. Others go along because, well, like education or other things, they get a lot of free stuff from the federal government. And others just go along because they don't, in some parts of the country, they don't understand the powers they really have, and the public's not holding them accountable. So everybody should be supporting the sheriffs who are doing the right thing, mobilizing the sheriffs who aren't as strong as they should be, and then electing new sheriffs where the current ones aren't doing their jobs.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that being step one. I won't say where it was because I don't want to get into that, but I was talking with people in a county, and I haven't thought about the sheriff the way you just clearly laid it out, and they said, you know, we've got a major drug issue here, and it was small town America, you know, a rural county. And I said, well, and he said, and the sheriff's not doing anything about it. And I said, well, what do you mean he's not doing anything about it? And they said, well, on your way out today, take a look at this place up on this hill, and I want you to look at the house that the sheriff lives in. And you will notice that there's no way a sheriff on their salary has those boats, that house, all those cars. He's on the take, and the drug cartel is paying him off, and he's accepting it. And that's your point. That's when, if you see things like that, then you got to rise up and replace that person.
Yeah, Yeah. And most of us don't think when we vote for sheriff. We just vote for because we know the name or we like the party affiliation. But really, throw them out if they're not doing the right thing.
So January 6th, and we just got a little bit of time. Did the left set up the perfect trap for Trump? So because you see what they're doing, you know, he's caused a riot. He's trying to overthrow the government. And they've turned this into just a battle cry. It may not be enough because people don't like not being able to afford groceries. I mean, they may have miscalculated that. But did he just walk right into a trap that was set for him by the left and those inside these agencies? I know this guy, this whistleblower. We're saying he's not credible, but it looked like he walked into a trap to me.
Somebody set a trap for him. I was there at the Capitol. I was outside on the Senate side. So I saw it, and I wrote a piece in the Federalist saying that agents provocateurs organized something in advance to exploit the crowd. And because the narrative at the time was that Trump spontaneously incited this.
Sure.
That wasn't true at all. You could see, having been to so many protests all my life, starting from, you know, when the communists trained,
sure. No nukes.
Yeah. It later became more nukes, less kooks.
Yeah.
But you know what to look for. So I always denounced Washington Post, and Senator Schumer called it mindless garbage, which, you know, real proud moment to get that label
yeah.
from him.
Yeah. He should know.
But go back and look now, 3 years ago. I was basically on the mark, as were other observers like Steve Baker at the time. And Steve's now being prosecuted. He went inside the Capitol as a reporter, and they're busting him, but not the 60 other reporters who went in. So somebody set this up. But what we all have to be careful of is to latch on to any news source who claims to have all kinds of knowledge that really reaffirms the stuff that we either think or sense or sure. want to believe, because there's a lot of phonies out there.
Yeah, it really serves all of us well to do our own journalistic
yes.
integrity
yes.
in that, you know, you use multiple sources and you don't, you know, for lack of a better term, put all your eggs in one basket. Mike, we've enjoyed having you on with us, and I'm going to keep your contact information. Next time I'm in D.C., I'm going to treat you to a hamburger at Martin's Tavern, one of my favorite places to eat.
I can take you up on it right now on both counts. Thank you.
and we do want to tell the audience, we didn't say at the beginning, we do want to thank your wife in a strange way that you are on the show this week because you're actually in a room at the hospital doing this. She's having surgery, and you were going to, like any good husband, say, I think I can always cancel this podcast appearance, but she wouldn't let you.
She wouldn't let me. She says, if it's with the Blaze, you are not going to let them down. I don't care what you. So she's the one who found this room that I'm in. It looks like a prison cell. It's just a little room.
I started to say it.
You might hear people in the background, but it was her. She says, you're not missing this.
Well, see, I didn't realize you were at the hospital. I thought, well, you know, Mike hadn't really put a lot into his podcast room there. You know, I thought he might have a flag or something hanging back there.
Well, you might want to get used to that because this book's out now. Start kind of getting accustomed to that environment. You know, with 2 minutes to go, are you concerned about backlash? I mean,
yeah. Well, but for myself, not really, because I'm kind of used to it. But I see what's happened to other people. I see what's happened to the FBI whistleblowers who come out. I was with one a couple days ago, Garrett O'Boyle. His family life has been destroyed by this because he came out as a whistleblower and he went through the proper channels, but they bankrupted him. They won't let him quit and they won't fire him. They've suspended him for more than a year without pay. They just took away his health insurance. He's got a brand new baby.
Wow.
They're sending him the bill for his moving expenses after they transferred him. And the Bureau was supposed to pay his expenses, but now they're sending him the bill because they said he's suspended and they won't let him find work. They're doing this to make an example of him. And Steve Friend is another FBI agent who's had similar things happen, and a whole bunch of others. They're making examples of folks so that the rest will be afraid to come out and talk.
Yeah, which goes back to what you said earlier. We do know a lot of people that know what's going on, but they've done a good job of breaking their will to tell anyone because they don't really want their lives to be destroyed. The book's called Big Intel, How the CIA and FBI Went from Cold War Heroes to Deep State Villains. You can get it wherever books are sold. It's been out since January, but if you haven't read it yet, you know, it's good to be informed. And we can still hear the echoes, as we've said on the big show during the week many times, of our founding fathers, who now the left has demonized. But so anything they said is you can't be part of it because it makes you evil. They always warned us, you better keep that government small, because any power you give them, they will always abuse. So don't give them much. Let's hear that from them. And let's thank Dr. Michael Waller for being our guest today.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate you.
Great to be with you guys.
Tell your wife hello. We hope she has a great recovery.
Yes.
And thanks to each one of you that joined us on this edition of Rick and Bubba University, the podcast.